Blog Talk Radio.
United is on the air. Hope everybody's having a great weekend so far.
It's almost over.
I know, isn't it? this is really the event that marks the end of the weekend for some.
We're the beginning. When we sign off, the buzzkill sets in.
That's it. We're the beginning of the end. It's all downhill. That's why we added a Wednesday night show to keep people from getting too depressed.
That's right. That's right. We're here. We're better than fucking Prozac.
Ugh. You said it, and obviously we're uncensored as well, as Jerry just made clear.
No, we have to be. It's just the way we are.
It's the benefit of Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
We're very excited to bring you the show tonight, and we have some great shows upcoming as well. This Wednesday we have several great guests, Jerry, including some friends of the show.
Yeah, including some friends of the show. We have Francis Abbey and Paul Busetti of 10 Sundays Productions, and we also have someone we have not had on before, one of the lead actors, Demetrius Parker, who is a very great actor and musician. He'll be joining us. He's one of the leads in Boxing Day, and it's just going to be a lot of fun, so please, everyone, tune in Wednesday night.
Yeah, and Boxing Day, we've been talking about this film off and on for the past several months, and Jerry, you've actually had experience working on it. We're excited to finally have them on.
It'll be a lot of fun.
To get more than just your point of view on it.
It's very important, actually, because like I've always said, if you get my point of view on it, it's a good way to turn people away.
Right. We don't want to do that with this
film.
It's too good. We also have director Paul Boyd and his cinematographer Dennis Maloney talking about a movie called Vicious Circle. And I'm excited about this because we rarely get an opportunity, to speak to DPs, to cinematographers. And I've always been anxious to explore that art. And we're also going to play an interview that we recently conducted with Charles Oliver, the writer-director of the movie Take, starring Minnie Driver, that opens in limited release on Friday the 18th. Really wrenching, thought-provoking movie that one is.
Right. Is our guest on the line yet? Or?
Yeah, he is.
All right, well, let's...
We're about to bring him on.
Okay.
And I also want to let people know, because we got some scoops early, and people might not realize if you haven't been following the show, for some movies upcoming. Chris Carter, the writer-director of the new X-Files movie and actually the creator of the whole series, we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. He is in our archives, as is Phyllida Lloyd, the director of Mamma Mia. So we got those scoops pretty early, so I want to make everyone aware that those are in our archives right now, those two interviews. All right, the chat room's humming along. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. Welcome to the show. Our first guest tonight, we've welcomed twice in the past. We're very passionate about his film and his cause. He's the writer-director of a film called The Plague, starring James Vanderbeek and Dee Wallace and a host of other terrific actors. When it came to the post-production process of his film, the powers that be took over the editing and went in a direction that was not the original intent of the writer or director. And so for the past better part of probably 2 years, he has been reassembling his own director's and writer's cut and campaigning to get that cut shown in video stores across the country and any other venue he can. Let me bring him on right now. It's a great pleasure to welcome Hal Masonberg back on the program. Mr. Masonberg, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, guys.
Hey,
absolutely.
No problem. Welcome back.
Absolutely. So I just gave, a little reminder as to the circumstances, and we talked about that in depth the previous two visits from you. Where are we at now with this crusade here?
Well, lately, actually, I started asking people, you know, that if they wanted to see the Plague Writers and Directors Cut released to DVD and Blu-ray, that they should start emailing some of the folks over at Sony Home Entertainment. And apparently, people started doing it in waves. And I spoke to a couple of folks over at Sony the other day, and the emails have been streaming in like crazy, apparently.
Good for you, and
thanks to everyone who you know, who's been writing and voicing their opinion in a very nice, respectable manner. The folks at Sony that I've spoken to so far have been incredibly responsive, and so I'm hoping that now that they're even more aware of it and that people are stepping up, that we'll be able to make some progress.
So this is really this is encouraging. So when you're speaking to Sony, they're not completely shut off to the idea of pursuing this. It's not they're not giving you the impression of we've been there, done that, and it's out of the question necessarily.
Yeah, that's not what I've gotten from them so far. And you know, there's some other folks that I've been directed to that I've put some calls in that I'm hoping to speak with. But no, the attitude doesn't seem to be negative at all. And from my past experiences, I had worked at Sony when I first moved to Los Angeles, got 18 years ago, in the publicity department, and the folks, the sound guys over there, did all the sound work on my short film, Mrs. Greer. My first script was sold over there, and I worked with Chris Lee and a bunch of other folks over there for a long time. So I have a really good history there up until the plague. Which you know, a lot of what happened with the plague, you know, didn't come down to being Sony's fault as much as the product that they were handed.
Right,
but
your relationship with them was very cordial and professional up until the last phase of the plague, correct? When it went into the editing room.
Yeah, my relationship with them was great. I never had a relationship with them during the plague because we weren't told that Sony had actually financed the film, which is what found out recently. We were told it was foreign pre-sales and such. And then we weren't told until we were just about in production that Screen Gems had come on as the distributor. But I had never at any point talked to anyone at Sony or at Screen Gems. Unfortunately, by the time that came around, the people in charge didn't seem interested, and I was very actively kept out of all of the meetings with Sony, et cetera. Not probably by the Sony people, but by the other producers.
I mean, this has been a long road for you in terms of, you know, culminating the footage you needed to reassemble your own vision of what the cut should be, in terms of fighting with building a website, campaigning to get this your cut of it seen. Was there any time where you felt like it, like throwing in the towel?
Oh yeah, pretty much every day.
What kept you going? It's the
film. You know, the fact that I believe in the film and that I know I'm not alone in that, I guess I'm not someone who, you know, will just sit back and let it happen. There's a film out there that hasn't been seen, and there's a film out there with my name on it that's not the film I made. You know, I guess I was reading on a one of the blogs somewhere, and there were comments, and someone said, "Oh, I wish this, you know, Hal Masonberg and his plague campaign would just like be done already. I'm sick of hearing about it." You know, and I wrote the guy back. I said, "Hey, believe me, I'm sick of doing it, as you are of hearing about it. But until the film gets released, you know, until it's out there and people can see it, I'm gonna keep fighting, and continue to make, you know, get my next film off the ground." Which I'm in the process of, you know, it's not going to stop me from moving forward, but.
Well, yeah, and I definitely want to explore what's upcoming for you, but I think that is important, and you know, filmmakers talk about their films being their children in a way. This is an idea that I'm sure you worked to develop and into fruition for a period of years, and you've been fighting to preserve that vision for a period of several more years. And like you said, it is something that's out there around the world. It has your name on it. And if it's not representative of what you originally envisioned, I would expect that to be a very painful place to be. How common is this, do you find,
I'd say it's more common than people realize. I had heard stories about this before it happened to me, many stories, but now that it's happened to me and, you know, more people come out of the woodwork and say, oh my God, I had the same experience and this is what's going on, and you start reading stories. Especially in the studio system, unfortunately, the films that come out are very often not reflective of the filmmakers. Of course, there's no way to know which films are and which films aren't, because very often people are smarter than I am, and they stay quiet so that they can continue their careers, you know, working within the system. But for me, it was more important for me to have the film out there than it was to play nice or let it happen and chalk it up to experience.
Well, that is another consideration, too, that I don't think necessarily that we've explored before. Have you found thus far that, I mean, I know you have another project on the horizon, but have you been fearful that would hinder you from further projects?
You know, strangely enough, I haven't. And I was warned by people, you know, you'll be blacklisted, you'll be this, you'll be that. And, you know, the way I look at it is anyone who would not want to work with me because I'm fighting to get my film out there are probably not people that I would want to work with either.
Absolutely.
We probably wouldn't make a great team. It probably wouldn't be a constructive relationship. So, you know, the people that would respect what I'm doing and, you know, and I'm trying to do this in a respectful manner and just kind of let people know, make people aware. You know, there's lots of people out there that I'm finding who still want to work with me and think what I'm doing is, you know, daring, if not a little crazy, but, you know, has potential to actually to work, and why not?
Yeah, and the you know, it's obvious that you were a director of tremendous talent by watching this director's cut. I think that the everything is imbued with kind of more meaning in your cut, whereas it could just be a straight laced B movie kids killing parents kind of exploitative exercise, whereas in your vision of it, I mean, it took on deeper meaning about where we are today, what we teach our kids, what we, the kind of fears and the violence that we feed them on a daily basis, and also everything comes off better. I mean, the performances sing a lot better in this one. They seem to really soar in this version of the film. So there's a wealth of benefits. I mean, there's a wealth, a laundry list of things that we go through that makes this cut better, your cut. And I'm wondering how supportive your cast has been in this process, because obviously they signed on for your vision. And so what have you heard from them in this fight to preserve your vision of it?
Ah, that's a good question. A number of them have been very vocal. You had Dee Wallace on a couple of weeks back, and I know that she had spoken a little bit about the plague. She's been wonderful. She, you know, unfortunately, Dee's role got really truncated in the producer's cut, in the version of the film that's out there. Most of her performance has been, you know, excised from the film, so you really don't get a sense of her character or of what she gave to this film. And I think it's very different. I think her performance in the director's cut is phenomenal. I think she's incredible.
Amazing, and it is one of those moments too. The whole story arc that she has in this film, it's one of those classic kind of horror film storylines. In that it reminded me of Night of the Living Dead. I mean, it's so horrific the journey that she has to go through, and yet it's so embedded into the themes that you're exploring in this movie. You know.
Thank you. And I'm sure Dee would appreciate that as well.
Yeah, and she is fantastic. She is fantastic in the director's cut. Let me play a little clip of what she had to say when we interviewed her last month about Cujo, and I brought up the plague. I know you're pressed for time because you're on set. I want to ask you about two more things before you leave. And one of the things is we've been speaking off and on with a director of yours. His name is Hal Masonberg.
And,
yeah, you were in a film of his called The Plague, And we've been discussing back and forth about what the studio has done with his film and basically taken it away from him. Tell me, in your view, what is missing from the cut that's out there now that
well,
became missing from the director.
You know, and I'm doing this because I'm not to be involved so much in the political battle here, but
yeah.
in the creative commentary. I loved this original script of Hal's because it made an enormous amount of commentary for me about the human tragedy and the human existence and how our fear literally is the disease that was the plague. And how our if we can conquer our fear and come together in communionship and love, then we can literally heal the world from this disease. And it was a secondary part, but a very, very core part of the script. And it's all been taken out. It just lifted the picture into a whole other genre for me, as opposed to a horror film.
Yeah,
I've
having seen the director's cut, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I had a real strong reaction to the director's cut as well. So that was Dee Wallace on our show several weeks ago, and obviously she feels as passionate as you do about that original concept being preserved. Someone I haven't heard from is your lead actor. Is he involved in this at all, Vanderbeek, or not?
No. James is not, and I don't know if James has even seen, I don't know if he's seen either cut. I spoke to him when I first started this campaign, and we talked for a little while, and he basically, you know, I guess he doesn't like to watch himself in films, so he said that if he ever did get around to watching any version of A Plague, it would be mine, and I'd sent him a copy, so he has it, but I don't know if he's ever watched it. And I've spoken to Ivana Milicevic a couple of times, too. But she's been working quite a lot, and I don't know if she's seen either version. I know they had initially been called in to do a commentary track on the DVD, but didn't end up doing it, and I don't know why they didn't do the commentary. So, it would be great if James ever decided he wanted to see the film and was curious. I think, you know, when people hear that James Vanderbeek's in the film, you know, there's a lot of different reactions to that, and I think people who think of James as being just Dawson
right.
would actually be kind of surprised by the performance he gives in at least the director's cut, at least the writers and director's cut. A comment I get from a lot of people is, wow, I really like him. He's really cool in this film. And
yeah.
I think he is. I think he pulls
it off. I think so, too. I think that he's a great anchor for the movie. I mean, he's the guy that you want to follow through on this journey. I mean, and you're with him every step of the way. I was very impressed with him in the film.
It's good to hear because, you know, originally the character was much older and, you know, had been in prison a little bit longer. And when it looked like James was going to do the film, you know, we made some alterations to the script and to his character so that it would make more sense. And be more believable for James, and I'm really happy with how his performance ended up in the director's cut.
Another joy of the movie for me is the photography from Bill Butler.
Yeah.
And I know that we've paid lip service to this in past appearances, but listening to your commentary on this cut and how much thought and care went into each shot and establishing motivation in each shot, I mean, it's staggering, especially in an independent production where you're so rushed just to get it in the can. Tell me about that collaboration. Tell me about Bill Butler, working with him.
Well, being a big fan of Bill's and fan of films of the 70s, I grew up with those films. Those are the films that kind of inspired me to want to be a filmmaker as a kid. And so I knew for this film that I wanted a DP who had the sensibility that Bill had, where it wasn't about fast cutting, that he understood the compositions that I put together. I storyboard very extensively,
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that Bill would understand what I was going for, which isn't to say we didn't have our differences along the way, but we dealt with those differences in a really fun, creative way, and oftentimes came up with something better than either one of us had thought of initially, you know, just by coming together and walking around the sets. And but we did manage to stick, you know, very closely to my storyboards. And you know, I think when I first sat down with Bill, he was wondering, you know, who this guy was in this horror film. And as soon as I started talking about why I wanted to work with him and what I admired about his work, and he realized I actually knew his work, we hit it off from that point on. And he was great. You know, the guy is the fastest working DP. He can create the most incredible images in no time flat.
Wow.
You know,
well,
I watched the camera crew. You know,
and what a history!
Kind of
what a history of fantastic movies that he's photographed. Did he have stories to tell you about those older films, like Jaws and all of the seminal classics that he's been involved with?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's hard to work with Bill and not ask him about all those films. We talked about that quite extensively. As did the camera crew, who were all people he had never worked with. There was a great Canadian camera department, and so I think we were all quite taken with both his talent and his history. And you know, the sad thing is, I spoke to Bill not all that long ago, and he's still itching to get in there and color time the film. He was like me; he was not invited to color time the film, so the film that's out there on video right now is much brighter, much lighter than the film that we had shot. And even my DVD copy of it, because it was off of the DVD dailies, not the Super 35 print, I couldn't bring it down as dark and as detailed as we had intended. So the film still doesn't look the way we had wanted it to look.
Which is amazing. This is an artist with 30, 40 years of some of the great films under his belt.
How could you not ask him to? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
It is. It's insulting.
Well, it's the best way I can sum it up is, you know, is the folks that were involved, to the best of my ability to gauge how they were thinking, were not really concerned with the artistry. When we were trying to get Bill hired and he was ready and the production company was sort of taking its time making an offer, and I said, look, we're going to lose this guy. And they said, what does it matter? There are hundreds of DPs. We can get anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... And that's, you know, that's one way of looking at it. But for me, from an artistic point of view, there aren't just hundreds of other Bill Butlers out there.
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
And you were actually told by someone, I don't recall who, but I think this speaks to the point of view that films are a product as opposed to an artistic form. You're told by someone that to keep your the big shock moments, preserve those, and shoot the rest of it like you would just a basic television show, just basic setup.
Yeah, well, that was actually Clive. I'd had a conversation with Clive Barker before I went up to Canada to shoot the film, and you know, his advice, you know, which may be great advice for some, it's not really for me, but was to you know, to pick one or two key moments and put all of your creative energy into those, and then shoot the rest of the film like a TV movie. And that was sort of mirrored by another one of the producers at Armada, Chris Severnich, who basically said, you know, you should never have to do more than one take unless the gate is dirty. Otherwise, you do one take and move on. You know, also not...
That's
not
odd advice. I mean, no, I have to say, I'm surprised that Clive Barker, a creative individual like himself, would give you that kind of advice. But you have to do a couple of takes. I don't care who you are. You have to do
even
several
Clint Eastwood.
Takes.
Even
right. Well, to be clear, the several takes wasn't Clive's comment. Just so.
No, I know that was the other producers,
yeah,
but I mean,
yeah.
It just this is real. What I'm learning just in this conversation alone is that the people, the production company, these people really have no idea of the medium whatsoever.
Yeah, well, it's,
they're really,
you know,
clueless. I have to say.
The way I've always felt about it, at least concerning Clive, you know, who was very nice to me through the whole thing, and when everything fell apart, I simply couldn't get a hold of him and never heard from him, so I still to this day don't know what his feelings are about it or how much he knows about what went on behind the scenes.
Right.
But, you know, perhaps his advice was this is the best way to get through it since you only have a 20-day shoot, and we had been told we would get 25 to 28, and we ended up with a 20-day shoot. It's just, however, not the way I'm interested in making a film. I'm not, you know, for me it's about the storytelling, so...
Absolutely.
And 20 days, I mean, to be honest, 20 days is an incredibly brutal, tight schedule to adhere to on a film of this scope.
The story you
want to
tell, yeah.
Yeah.
We were told by three different line producers that we needed 28 to 30 days minimum to do this script, and none of those line producers ended up being a line producer on the film. I don't think it was what the production company wanted to hear, so I think they went and found someone who told them what they wanted to hear, is my guess, but... 20 days was not long enough. However, you know, what I'm discovering in this process and as time moves on is this has been such an incredible learning experience for me, personally and professionally. And what I've gotten out of having to shoot a movie like this in 20 days and, you know, finding ways to just deal with the short amount of time and all the setups and still how to put it together and still come out with what I believe is a really solid film that's still... is my vision in the writers and director's cut, despite any sacrifices we had to make on set and you know scenes were cut, etc. The whole experience, it's a strange thing to say, but in some twisted way, I'm grateful that everything went down the way it did because of what I've learned. You know, so there's and how I'm approaching my next film is a direct result of my experiences on the plague.
Tell me about that next film, whatever you can about it.
It's called Clean. It's sort of a psychological thriller. It's several interconnected stories. It takes place mostly in England. We're shooting over in England, and I've teamed up with a British production company called Locke and LaRue, which is headed by a woman named Amira Bunyard. So we're in the process of raising financing right now, and the script's out to some name actors. And it's, for lack of a better description, I've been told by other people that it's sort of a Memento meets Magnolia type of script, even though I try to shy away from descriptions like that. But it's a difficult.
Well, you can't get two better comparisons.
See, that is quite a comparison.
I took it as a compliment, so I have no problem throwing it out there. But like the plague, it fits into a genre, and yet at the same time doesn't. You know, it's where the plague is a horror film, but it's not really a horror film the way most people think of horror today.
Right.
So I think, you know, marketing a film like The Plague to Clive Barker fans is not necessarily going to get the best results because it's not that genre of horror.
Right, right.
You know. And the same thing with Clean. It's a psychological thriller, but it's not a quick-cutting, fast-paced psychological thriller. So it's
right.
You know.
When do you expect to get that rolling?
We're hoping to be shooting either by the end of this year or the beginning of next.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
That's our optimistic goal. But as you guys know, there's a million things that go on in getting a film off the ground. So
That's very true.
We've got a great script, and we're getting a lot of really terrific responses. So we're very
now, was this one written by yourself? Was Teal involved in this one at all? Or?
Teal wasn't involved with the writing of this script, but he was involved in the initial idea. It was something that Teal and I had worked on conceptually, but then Teal went off to do his own novel writing, and I'm making films, and so we're not working together anymore as a writing team. But I took this initial concept and went ahead and wrote the script myself.
Okay. Well, I can't wait for it. I can't wait for it. That sounds like an exciting project. You know, the reason why I feel so excited about having you on each time is because we have a large listener base of people that have an interest in filmmaking themselves, independent filmmakers, and I think it's an important story to relate to them. So, going through this experience, what advice would you give to those filmmakers out there?
The biggest piece of advice I would give is whenever someone tells you it can't be done or it can't be done that way or that never happens, don't buy it. there's no reason you can't make your film. You don't need permission to make it. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean it's not going to take a lot of work and beat you down a lot. But you can make your film no matter what. And, you know, and you can maintain control. I mean, that's the thing that I hear over and over and that I sort of gave into on The Plague was people saying you'll never have Final Cut. No one will ever give that to you. You'll never be allowed to do that. And it wasn't until after I made The Plague and lost it that I realized, well, of course I can do that. I just don't do it through that system.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but, you know, it all depends what's important, whether you're looking to have a career boost, in which case, you know, make a film that just gets you recognized. But if you're looking to make a film that you care about, maintain control, even when everyone tells you you can't. Maintain control because the odds are, unless you're very, very lucky and you're with some really genuine people, which, you know, there's a shortage of here in Los Angeles.
Always has been.
Yeah, always has been. You know, it's not an enormous amount of integrity in this town. But if you can find the people who
have
that integrity.
That's putting them oddly.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but there are good people. I mean, I've worked with them. I've seen them. You know, I'm hoping the folks at Sony, you know, will step up and get excited about this. You know, but don't give up what's most important to you. I think it was, I might have mentioned this once before, there was something John Cassavetes said once, which was, you know, pick the five things that are most important to you about making a film. Those will be the first five things they'll try to take away from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well,
I
what,
say
what,
basically hold on to those things.
What are the what are the platforms, where can our listeners go once again for more information on your fight and to possibly help out in any way?
The website that I have up is called spreadingtheplague.com, and there's an interview on there with you know, people like Dee Wallace and John Connolly, who was the sheriff, and Brad Sawatsky, who was Deputy Nathan Burgundy. There's, you know, film critics and other people on there, myself. You can, you know, radio interviews, all kinds of stuff on there. There's also a link to the petition, which is incredibly important right now. People haven't signed it just because now that I'm in talks with Sony, they're actually watching it.
Mm.
So, and there's also, if you go to spreadingtheplague.com/sony.html, you'll find some email addresses to some of the folks at Sony Home Entertainment, and you can let them know in the nicest, most respectful way possible that you would like
right.
to see Plague Writers and Directors Cut. Don't bombard them with emails. Just be you know, very professional about it.
Absolutely. And then, you know, to our listener base out there, I mean, I know this is a subject that they all feel passionate about, so write those passionate letters if you can to just support an artist and an artist's work. And Mr. Masonberg, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I admire your stick-to-itiveness and your determination, and most of all, just your passion to see your vision come to life.
I admire his integrity.
It's very inspiring to
us.
Well, thank you, guys, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate how supportive you've been in having me on.
No problem, and I'm glad that there's starting to be a light at the end of this tunnel for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Fingers crossed. I'll keep fighting until it's out there and everyone you know, in your audience can see it.
Well, thank you. Keep us updated, and when we have some word on a possible release or any more stages to this, just let us know, and we'll let our listeners know in return.
Great. Thanks so much, guys. Much appreciated.
No problem.
Thank you, Hal.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye
now.
Bye.
That's Hal Masonberg. His film is called The Plague, and hopefully we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, like
yeah.
I said. Maybe.
I was kind of shocked that Clive – I mean, I can understand why Clive told him that, but I'm still kind of shocked that he would give that kind of advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're looking at is he was looking at a 20-day schedule. He doesn't necessarily know Hal's artistry.
How Hal worked, you know, that's
or his intention. You know, I think that not having that knowledge, I mean, that's good, smart. That's probably the smartest advice you can give someone.
Yeah, I mean, his advice is kind of shocking, but I understand that. It was the other producer, though. One take? I don't care who you are. You need to do more than one take. You have to do several.
I mean, it's you know, when you don't have, you know, Brando couldn't do one take. So, I mean, He was too busy eating in the first take.
Yeah, the mortician sequence of The Godfather, he's eating sandwiches tucked underneath Sonny. That's right.
How many hot dogs did Pink's Hot Dogs for Brando? Was it the record, 20?
It was insane. I just, you know, you wonder why they're plumbing this screwed up in Los Angeles. I mean, come on, they're going to recover from that.
It's amazing. Yeah. I love that interview. I love the history of Hollywood as seen through Pink's Hot Dogs, the establishment of Hollywood.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better one.
That's a beautiful thing right there. Our next guest is up on the line and ready to go, and this is another story that is very inspiring, and I think that is of great value to our listenership out there. I mean, like I said, we're listened to, and Jerry, you can attest to this, by people from all ends of the spectrum, people that casually like films, that to people with a very deep passion for films. And that includes, burgeoning artists, that want to be filmmakers, want to be actors.
That's right.
Just feel it in their bones. And this next guest has always had that sense about himself that he wanted to pursue acting. And like so many of us, life stepped in. And he's had a very successful business and family life, and he's at a comfortable spot where he thought, I want to pursue this now. He's had great success with it, and it's a great pleasure to always welcome him back on the show to give us updates about this. This is his second appearance with us. I'd like to introduce to everyone Mr. Tony Zinzamici. Tony, are you with us?
Yes, Jamie. How you doing?
How you doing, sir? It's great to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really do appreciate it and enjoy being here.
So reiterate, since it's been many months since you've been here, I mean, I spoke to it a little bit just now, but you've always kind of had this acting bug within you. When did you make the decision to start pursuing it?
Well, like you said, I mean, there was a point in time in my life where, you know, the family is, you know, really strong. The business that we own is doing well, and you know, started getting involved in some theater at our church under a director and a writer by the name of Derek Johnson, who, you know, wrote some wonderful pieces that we performed, and really started getting, the so-called juices flowing again. And, you know, with some meetings with him and some people that were in the drama team there, you know, looked at, you know, getting back into, you know, doing this. And I did some brief stuff when I was in college and did some theater there. And when this hit me again, it was just time to really start pursuing it.
Has it been, who have you been your cheerleaders? Because obviously you're coming mostly, you're attacking this industry. And I wouldn't imagine you have many people around you that understand this industry necessarily among your family and friends. Have they been supportive all the way through for you?
Oh, very much so. And you really couldn't do this without a support system like that, because there are things that you sacrifice in order to do this. I mean, there's time away from your family. And, you know, that when you're filming, you know, there's the sacrifice of your time from your family. But as a actor that's always pursuing his craft, there's times of, personal growth that I'm going through, my studying as an actor, you know, understanding what my instrument is that I have within me, you know, so those are things that I pursue on a daily basis. And, you know, when I'm in my workshops, you know, I'm out, at night, and it's, difficult being away. So without a support system as a strong family, it's very difficult to do this.
Yeah, tell me about that. Tell me about that pursuit beyond – we'll get to the work in just a little bit, but the pursuit in terms of training, what are the lessons that you've taken from training thus far, and where do you hope it'll take you?
Well, the type of training that I go through is, you know, basically you may call it, you know, method acting. Being able to pursue a character from a true organic, you know, perspective. And, you know, being able to create a character from the ground up. And, you know, when I look at different scripts or parts that I'm going to be portraying, you know, we build this character literally from the ground up. And the classes that I'm involved with and are taking and workshops that we do, you know, there's roles that that I am doing that, you know, are not like me. You know, there's so many roles that I've tried to tackle that are not Tony Sansamici by any stretch of the imagination. So being able to go in there and understand, okay, you know, where's my instrument? You know, me being a human being, you know, what's inside of me is what our instrument is and how to use that.
Yes. Do you find that so far in your work that you've procured in film that you're being placed are you the action guy? Is this what's happening to you, to your career so far? Are you being identified mostly with a certain role?
I'd like to say yes and no to that, because after my first film that we talked about, which was Scout's Honor, where I actually played a motorcycle gang member, which was so fun to do because of the athletes that were cast in this, Mike Allstark from the Tampa Bay Bucks and Jim Kelly from the Bills and, you know, T.D. Ohana too. You know, it was fun being around those guys and playing this bad biker guy in a little, you know, family movie, Boy Scouts, you know, that take over this gang that is coming into this small town. But basically, I've gone anything from one of my last films, which I played a commander in a private militia for a security firm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do that as well as the husband.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I know. Let's talk. Last time I talked to you, you were Scout's Honor was just about to premiere,
mm-hmm.
I believe,
right.
And you've had several films under your belt in the interim here. Tell me about some of those projects and some of these people that you've had the pleasure of working with.
One of the films that I did last year was a film called Lockjaw: Rise of the Coolest Serpent, and basically, it's a thriller based on the Louisiana type mystery of the, you know, the bayou, the Cajun, you know, type of setting up there, with the mystery of, you know, that type of culture at times. And this little boy happens to acquire this magical pen that would basically bring anything to life that he would feel like drawing. And I was a very bad husband in that film, if you could say that politely right now. And I went from being a very abusive spouse to getting the revenge of a son that decided that he did not like to see his father act the way he is.
Right. And then you did something with Michael Ironside and Stephen Bauer, something called Mutants?
Yes, I did. In this last film, Lockjaw, DMX was one of the stars in that. So it was kind of fun, you know, being around him with that film. But this film with Michael Ironside and Stephen Bauer called Mutants basically really showed the greed of corporate America at times, not caring about you know, what the end result is, as long as they get their product out there and not really, you know, caring what the results are, you know, in the population. And we actually painted sugar to become a highly addictive product.
Right.
And we had some mishaps with some of our test subjects.
But fantastic people to work with, and I'm wondering if you... You know, it'd be too good of an opportunity not to set them aside and ask for, you know, not advice. I would think. Did you get any pearls of wisdom from any of these, Michael Ironside or Bauer or any of these great people that you've worked with?
Oh yeah, Michael was a great guy to be around. He was really easy to talk to. You know, when we weren't working, we were able to sit down and talk to him a little bit. And, you know, he kind of likes his space sometimes. But, you know, just basically asking him, you know, what did you do? What would you think about this? And basically pursuing is mainly the ultimate, you know, advice that he really gives is, you know, if you love what you're doing, just keep pursuing it. And he said, you know, don't give up on your dream if it's your dream.
Right. Are you able to workshop some of these? Are you able to integrate some of these projects that you're doing into your acting classes at all? Are you able to workshop some scenes and moments?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have. One of the scenes that I did was originally from Lockjaw, and we were doing that as a scene in class, and it really was such a powerful scene that we taped it, and when time for the auditions were to come up, we sent it in as an actual scene to the director and casting agent, and they absolutely fell in love with it and booked both myself and my partner at the time, who was Deborah Arnott. So that was kind of nice to see that happen.
Well, that's fantastic. And I know, I understand you're also you're doing a theater production in September.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct? It's called Two Rooms. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a real powerful production, a play written by Lee Blessing. And originally was opened in La Jolla, California in 1988. So it had to do with a husband and wife and some others that were teachers over in Beirut, and they happened to be captured and held hostage. Mm. And the husband, who is actually detained with one of the other teachers at that time, was he was in solitude as far as his captivity, and his wife, in sympathy to that, really was trying to understand his plight. And basically what she did is she really emptied out a room at her house and tried to understand what her husband was going through on a daily basis, being in captivity. And, being able to look at this, and the two of them act alone on the stage, but if you can understand, they actually have almost a mental telepathy together, where they actually come together throughout this play, and they absolutely come together back as husband and wife again, not through physical connection being, but just through the love that they have for each other. And
yeah,
really deals with that through, the captivity of their terrorists that were in Beirut.
I think I remember the show. I've never seen it, but I remember it being a powerful piece. It premieres in September in Tampa,
yes,
at the Heather Theater.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that? I know a lot of actors say that the pure acting takes place on the stage as opposed to films. Do you find that that's the case?
Well, I think with theater, you have a little bit more room to be more creative in your character role, because it's a bigger stage, meaning,
yeah,
you have a bigger world to live in, as opposed to the camera, which is, at times, 12 inches from your face.
Right.
I think theater gives an opportunity for an actor to expand some character development and being able to do some different things where you may not have that availability on a film set.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are going to start groaning in the chat room when I say this, but in terms of acting, I'm sure you have your own heroes, and I want to hear what those heroes are. But for me, it's always been Al Pacino, and he's always said about theater that it is like a tightrope where you could fail at any moment, at any night, and it's that that adrenaline that is like no film set for him. And it's a real test of an actor's mettle, is stage as opposed to film. That's why I ask. You're working – at the same time, you're working in independent projects where – probably without the luxury of a great amount of time, just because of the nature of what independent film is,
mm-hmm,
and you have to get it right pretty early. Have a lot of chance. Yeah. So tell me about that process when you first stepped in front of the camera. What kind of trepidations you had, if you were fearful, and how you got over those?
Yes, and that's very easy to happen to an actor, young actor. New in the business, very easy for those things to really come upon you. But basically, I think you have to be grounded in your craft and understand what you're trying to do with your character And when you understand who your character is and the way that you've created this character, really my brain needs to go away.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm personally not that character. So, you know, my brain and everything needs to go away, which would be the fear and anxiety and things that go along with that, and just have the character there that needs to be on that set.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like you're getting, that you're growing, that you're getting better each job out?
I do feel that, Jamie. I appreciate you asking that, because you want to understand what you're doing with your work and who's acknowledging the work that you're doing and looking to cast you in different things. And when you see the roles that you're going up for, you know, sometimes you had to, you know, be satisfied with, you know, a small day player role. You know, now at times, you know, you may have a bigger part as a day player, but it still may be a day player role. And then you start being asked for, you know, more supporting roles, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, secondary leads, and then also leads. So, yeah, so I have seen that, and I was fortunate enough in Mutants to actually be one of the leads in that project.
Mm. And I think that independent film as well, I mean, you're building a career in that realm, and more larger scale actors are turning to independent films as well, because Hollywood isn't necessarily producing the caliber of role that they want. And I think you're about to work with Burt Reynolds, aren't you?
Yes, there's a film coming up later this year called Fonder Hearts, which real excited to be part of that project. It's about a story of a young group of kids, and we've all had them as we're growing up, the clique that we've been involved with, and, you know, any number of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids that, you know, consistently hung around together. And what happens to one of that gang or, you know, one of the group of kids in there that comes down with an illness and eventually just passes away, and what happens to them as a group, but then also the effect that they have on somebody that they've become friends with through his ordeal while he was in the hospital, and how that affects him and his life.
Mm. Have you met with Mr. Reynolds yet? We're actually, I think I spoke to you on the phone a couple of weeks ago about our desire to speak to Burt Reynolds. We've been trying to get him for so long. Have you met with him yet? Can you give me a sense of what the man is like?
No, I have not had the pleasure of meeting with him yet, and I'm looking forward to that, you know, in the near future. So, you know, hopefully everything works out well with that. There are a couple other things that they're looking at, you know, to finish that up as far as some of the other cast. But
right.
They're really, really looking forward to getting this thing off the ground.
And talk about, you know, you and I are obviously, we're both from Florida, for our listeners that aren't aware. And Reynolds is a real kind of, in terms of inspiring the youth to pursue acting, he's a real hero here in this area. He lives, you know, not far away, and he's set up his own theater camp, and he's been very influential in terms of acting and inspiring young actors. I also understand that you have you're looking beyond acting a little bit into the producing realm, aren't you?
Yes, we actually are doing a feature called American Empire, which we're real proud of. Ed Filmworks, that my partner Kevin Ward is the writer of this particular product, and has to do with really the downtown Tampa, Ybor City, you know, type of, you know, I don't want to say gothic, but that alternative type music industry. And
yeah,
it's really a powerful piece about the one main character named Rennie DeAngelis, who is a powerful underworld figure, and how he controls the state of Florida. And unfortunately, two of his young fledglings, you know, are looking to possibly take him out at some point in time, or at least, you know, take some of his money. And that's not something that you do readily against Rennie DeAngelis. But,
right.
You know, we have a director, Andy Armstrong, who we couldn't be more happy to have on board with this project. I mean, this guy has been involved as a stunt director for Wildfire, Anger Management, Scooby-Doo, Charlie's Angels, Aragon. It's just amazing what Andy has done in his career, and you know, he's looking at stepping into more of a director's role on some things, and you know, he found the script to be, you know, highly motivated to do that with.
Yeah, he is a legend, and I know in the stunt world, as is his mm-hmm. brother Vic. I mean, they've really made their mark big time on some of the biggest stunt work in the history of movies. So,
this
should be a really exciting project. I want to know from you what kind of because our listenership, as we've said before, it runs the gamut. I know a lot of people want to know how to pursue this dream, this passion that they have for performance.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest to those people?
Well, I think if you have to understand what you want to do, and you know, there's different opportunities within this industry. I mean, you know, there's always your local theater that you know you can be involved with, but if it's film and TV and you know, on the big screen type of work that you want to pursue, there's you know, something that you have to understand is you know, where are you in the market? You know,
right.
are you in an area that, you know, has film and TV, you know, being here in Florida, getting kind of tough, especially since they cut the budget to, you know, $5 million for, you know, basically tax incentives for, you know, production companies to come here. But, you know, if you look at that, you know, being able to, you know, find a good workshop, something that you can look at and understand what kind of actor you are at this point in time, can you, what kind of energies that you have that are available, you know, being able to look at your craft or your instrument and say, okay, what do I need to work on to show a different side of me? What different levels can I do as an actor? Sometimes an actor, you know, goes out there and all they have is this one intense level that they can do. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not life. Life is just a series of different levels of not just emotions, but ideas and attitudes. So, you know, being able to pursue that and understanding, you know, teachers that are willing to teach that.
Yeah, we have a, I mean, I have a very strong curiosity about the craft of acting, and actually, in a future show, we're planning to dedicate a couple of hours to acting with you know, where we'll cover Stanislavski and Stella Adler and all the seminal teachers of acting over the past history of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So I admire you for going out there and giving it your all, and you're finding great success, and I know that only greater success will meet you in the future. And I mean, I appreciate you you coming back on and giving us an update on where you're at.
Well, Jamie, thanks. I really do appreciate it. You guys have been real supportive, and you know, I really congratulate you on all the success you guys have had.
Well, thank you.
Listening to your interviews, I mean, I'm just sitting back sometimes going, man, you got the palm on here. You had Goldblum. I mean, what an awesome interview that was.
We are just as amazed as anyone, believe me. We're like, what are we doing interviewing these people? But I'm sure you find yourself in the same position. I mean, you're striving for your dream, and all of a sudden you find yourself on a set with these people that you've admired from afar.
Right.
There's an element of surreal to it, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. And there's nothing like it. I mean, when you get on a film set or even a TV, you know, an episodic or something, and, you know, you just sit there going, am I really doing this?
Yeah,
you know, it's just such a cool thing, and I've had so much fun doing it, and you know, looking forward to you know, seeing what comes down the pike, and you know, we're starting a new film next month, so I'm trying to get ready for that.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. You're welcome back on anytime. Put in a good word for us with Bert.
Okay.
Yeah, really.
If you start calling me, I'll try to do that.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, guys, I appreciate it.
All right, buddy, bye-bye now.
Yeah, bye-bye now.
That is Tony Zinzamici, an up-and-coming actor. He went for his dream, and he's got it. He's got the bull by the horns. I think that's very inspiring. It's never too late. Never too late, my friend.
No, never, not at all. No, it was very good. We got to get Burt Reynolds on here.
I'd like to, and the good thing is he can't slap me because it's over the phone.
You think he would slap you? I mean,
no, I don't know. You see these video clips of, you know, but these were morons that interviewed. You remember that clip of the moron at the Longest Yard, the remake premiere?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "How did this film come about for you?" And Burt Reynolds said, "Well, did you ever see the original Longest Yard?" And he said, "Oh, there's another one." And Burt Reynolds kind of gave him a gingerly slap to the face.
I would have punched the guy. I mean, the original is a great movie. I mean, it's just, how can you come to an interview like so unprepared like that? What do you mean?
Because more and more film journalists, and I think that this is what sets the people in our chat room apart and that know movies and us apart too, is because we're not just educated on the latest Adam Sandler movie. Our kind of scope of history of film goes a little bit beyond that.
I think
there's so many film journalists out there. I mean, they're gossip mongers. They don't know anything about the art form.
No, they don't know anything about, they have their idea of an old film as Gladiator. So,
Jason
O'Brien's back, by the way, in the chat room. Let's just stop the show.
I wish I had some applause. He disappeared for a while.
He went to have some pizza.
And that's really kind of discouraging, That's why you don't see a lot of good, informative interviews. I was watching James Lipton the other night, and he was on Charlie Rose. And say what you will about James Lipton, but at least his is a show that explores craft, as opposed to all the other stuff that you don't really glean anything from.
Well, he has a history. Like the guy, like James Lipton or the people on Turner Classic Movies or something, they have a real strong history.
Yeah.
Of the craft, and a lot of people, I see there are a lot of people online have that too, but some of the latest, you read in the print is really shocking that there are people who don't know after
I think it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
I think because the currency of a film critic position is, it's becoming less and less valid. You're seeing more and more layoffs in the big city newspapers from some of our great critics.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's only going to get worse. And the sad thing of it is, I think that this is our most viable art form today. I think this is the most exciting. It's obviously the most profitable, the most influential art form we have. And it's not that old of an art form.
No, it's only about 100, over 100 years old. I mean,
absolutely.
It is still a young art form, and I don't know. I find it very discouraging. You talk to people, they don't know. First of all, it's a remake. They don't know it was a foreign film or something. They look at you like you're from Mars.
Far we've grown in the history of this art form.
Yeah.
The history of this 100-year art form, and us not necessarily, being visionaries. I mean, I can't imagine what is upcoming,
right.
New way of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And is it all involved special effects? I can't imagine. There has to be some, in the future, there's got to be some groundswell of a new way to tell a story or something.
Well, remember when we had, it was very interesting. Now, before we go, there was an observation, and it was when we had Paul Schrader on. And Paul Schrader was talking about the movie on the cell phone. That's what he was, he wanted to jump on that bandwagon. Then the two filmmakers we had on after that talked about the joy of seeing their film with an audience in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such an interesting juxtaposition. These young filmmakers were really wanted to stick with the way a movie should be seen. And Paul, but thinking ahead, wanted to, is looking at the future where he thinks this is all going because he doesn't think there are going to be theaters left anymore. So I always found that to be like our quintessential show of the old and new, where everything was going.
Yeah, but I think no matter what, the basis, the grounding of all filmmaking is in storytelling. I mean, no matter what medium you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the problem with there's not a lot of great storytelling. And those movies, we forget about, but the ones that do have the great storytelling, I mean, you can have all the most awesome visuals you want in the world. If there's nothing beneath that, you don't have anything as far as I'm concerned.
Right, right. It's very interesting, and an interesting show tonight. We talked to someone who has a passion to be an artist and talk to somebody else who has a passion to maintain their artistic integrity. So I think it's been a valuable show tonight. And,
it has been.
We hope everybody joins us again on Wednesday night. It starts at 9:30. It's a special time for Movie Geeks. At 9:30 Wednesday night, an hour and a half program where we're going to talk to some fantastically talented people. And until then, Jerry,
until
it's been a pleasure.
Then, you know, what, should we have like a signing off thing that we say?
Auld Lang Syne, or should we sing Auld Lang Syne or something?
No. I don't know if we should do that. We want to keep listeners.
Right.
You know, and you know, just you know, be good. How's that? Be good or be bad?
Yeah,
you know.
Well, yeah, the Jerry Springer thing. Be good to each other.
Be good to each other, or be bad to each other. And futurist.
Yeah,
be good.
After an hour, people throw chairs at each other in his show. He's like, be good to each other.
Really? After people got sent to the hospital.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you for joining us in the chat room. Futurist Joel. Joel, we got to talk, buddy. Give me a call. Yo, Adrian, Olivia, my love, Zombified, Chris, Patrick A., Anthony T., Jason, everybody, all the guests.
All you guys
there.
Are awesome. We love all of you.
If you guys want to call in, we'll talk to you.
You type something and we respond back to you. Oh, my God.
If not, I'll tell you what, we'll give you 5 minutes to call in if anyone has anything to talk about.
Because
they're saying extend the show. Jerry, tell me what you think about Hellboy. I know you posted your review of it.
Yeah, I posted my review.
Glowing.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I had no problem with Hellboy. I liked the first one a lot. I do want to clarify something. In my review, I was not saying that 2004 altogether was a bad film year, but like the first 2 months were rough going for good movies, because it wasn't until like late March and early April that the really great films started to come out, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Hellboy. And Hellboy was really like the first movie, because I didn't expect much. I didn't expect much in the sense that I wanted, you know, I knew about the character and I loved Del Toro, but I was kind of always swept off my feet by the film, by the just like great visuals, but also great storytelling. And also, they just found the perfect part for Ron Perlman. It was just incredible. And it was just, it's a magnificent.
It's too bad that all of his perfect parts involve a mask over his face, though, does it?
Well,
Kara, have we ever been able to see the real Ron Perlman?
Why don't you think you're speaking of Beauty and the Beast? In City of Lost Children and the Alien Resurrection, where he was really the only good thing in Alien Resurrection, he had the Bill Paxton part, essentially. But he's worked with Del Toro before, but he does a lot of voice work for a lot of animated shows over the years, especially before Hellboy. But it was just like really the perfect part for him.
It's really, you know, I haven't seen either Hellboy, but I will, and I do admire his boundless imagination. I mean, talk about a kid in a candy store when it comes to a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
Sense you get from him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Wait, who's calling in? Someone's going to call in.
Yes, and he does use, before we take this call, he does use the Barry Manilow song in this new Hellboy.
Yeah, I was thinking of you during that scene. I thought of you. I was like, oh, God, Jamie will love this.
Oh, yeah. Let's take this caller. It looks like a Skype call. Hello?
Hello, Jamie, my love.
Hello, Olivia.
Hello.
My lovely.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good.
Lust, am I still the lust of your loins?
Yes. Is this the dirty talk portion of the show right now?
Oh, yeah.
No, it is. No, nobody's listening but you and me.
That's right. Jerry, shh, be quiet. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, yeah, well.
So have you been? Have you were at a place, Olivia, where you were able? You're in Palm Beach area.
Pebble Beach.
You've been able to see some outside of the box kind of movies, and you've taken them in. Like, tell me about some of these movies that you've seen.
Outside of the box, Jamie, are you still talking dirty to me? Is that what you're trying to do?
Oh my God.
Oh, Jamie.
Are you calling from a Russian submarine, Olivia? I can barely hear you.
She's on Skype.
Oh, that's my sexy voice.
I can barely, you know, I do like the sexy voice.
I don't know. Can you hear me, Jamie?
I can hear you, and that's all that matters, my love.
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking, because, you know, I'm really not into voyeurs. You know what
now,
I mean?
You've seen the fall. Tell me about the fall.
Oh, I loved the fall.
Well, that was a great movie.
Yeah, it was. But I've seen it a while ago now. I did. I saw that one, and then I saw Before the Rains, which I loved. Before the Rains. I thought Before the Rains was really good.
Before the Rains?
Yeah.
The Indian film, right?
Yeah.
That was good. I like that, yes.
Jason O'Brien, so...
What's going on in our chat room?
He says, I have a DOS booty. That would be DOS. And we don't have DOS anymore because, of course, it's not available.
DOS.
Yeah. No, so you know what? I was disappointed. I wanted to see Mamma Mia, and I live in such a little place here that they don't have it playing anywhere yet.
But it doesn't open until Friday. Yeah.
It opened Friday already, right?
No, it opens
Friday the
18th.
Oh, well, shit. No wonder. I thought it opened just this past Friday.
Yeah, it opens up against the new Batman movie, so I think they're vying for different audiences. But either way, they're a group of people that sure like to dress up. both audiences.
Yeah. Well, you'll get all the people that are, the macabre. They kind of want to see the Joker and the whole Keith Ledger thing and all that.
Yeah, well, this
Dark Knight
is going
definitely
to
a morbid curiosity.
I think that will draw some people. I do.
Yeah.
Parisian petticoats. I don't wear petticoats, futurists.
Let me bring on this other call.
Who the other call is.
We're going to open it up. I'm not sure who the other call is. We're going to open it up. This is going to be a four-way now.
Baby.
205, go right ahead.
You don't know it's me?
Well, I knew it was you, but you said it was you in the chat room.
First of all, what is this about ending the show early? I mean, what is this crap?
No, we didn't end the show. I mean, we weren't ending the show early. I mean,
you were saying goodbye. I heard goodbyes.
Well, no, that's
what I do. What I do is, in case we talk a little over an hour, I schedule it for an hour and a half, just as a safety, so you don't miss anything as a live listener. Olivia's the one that taught me to do that. But we're here for you,
Jason. I'm planning an hour and a half.
Do you have something to say?
I see an hour and a half. I'm planning for an hour and a half. I want my whole show here.
Well, you're the star of the show right now.
Stop banging the pizza delivery girl and listen to the show.
Do you need some therapy, Jason? Do we need to have a conversation?
Why on the couch, buddy? Thank you. I appreciate it, though. But actually, I thought, is this the phone sex line? Did I call into the right number? Or?
Well,
BTR has one? Does Levy know about this?
Very concerned about Levy. I tell you what.
I was on a show. I was nervous.
Jason, have you seen anything worth anything lately?
Have I seen anything worth anything? Is that what you asked me?
Wait, you saw
what? Are you going to start criticizing my questioning skills here on my own show?
I wouldn't do that at all.
Why don't you get a fucking room? I mean, really?
What is Jerry going on about now? Is Jerry okay?
It's like I'm doing BTR relationship host therapy here. I mean, between Olivia, Jason, we're all hosts here, and you guys, I don't know, it's like the good, the bad, and the fucking ugly. I mean, shit.
I don't even want to ask who's who in that list.
Well, I don't know. I want to know which is which.
Yeah, who's the good, the bad, and the in the,
I'll let
in the fucking
you guys,
room?
I'll let you guys figure that out, all right?
This is
a
good therapy session, though.
Two of those categories, actually.
Anyway, back to fucking ugly. Jason, have you seen anything this weekend?
I figured it out for us.
Did you see Hellboy this weekend?
Did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Yes. Did you see Hellboy this weekend?
No, I have no interest whatsoever in seeing Hellboy.
Really?
No.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. It looks so uninteresting to me.
But you like 21.
Thanks for bringing up that one again. If I'm not taking enough flack last week, I've been getting emails about it all week long. How can you pick 21?
Well, it's not the EPA. I mean, come on. I mean, come on, Jason. You're a bright guy. I mean,
well,
you're bright.
You
have good taste. 21.
And it's a great film. What are you talking about?
Oh,
like,
no, it's not a great. Oh my God.
Or something?
Oh God, Jason, it's not a great film. No, I mean, you know, Carell is a great film in retrospect. No, I'm sorry.
And you want to go see Hellboy? Did you see
Hellboy? Hellboy is much better than 21. Okay,
oh
better.
Oh my God.
Yeah, much better. Better
level.
Direction. Better. Just everything. 21.
Well, yeah, okay.
Go,
so it has
about Vegas that makes Vegas look uninteresting.
Hey,
okay.
I'm completely interested in Vegas. Thank you very much.
But it's the only film I've ever seen that manages to make you not want to go to Vegas. I'm sorry, Jason. That one I'm just going to have to pound you with. But it's not as bad as Jamie picking The Strangers just because we
That's
have the
right.
fucking guy on the show.
I know.
Not at all true. Not at all true.
That's why you did it,
dude.
Dude, Jamie, from one doormat to another, it was a bad choice. You don't have to bow. You don't have to bend over that badly.
I'll bend over for The Strangers. I enjoyed it.
Jamie, that's not what you told me after you saw it, okay?
I did tell you. That's exactly what I told you.
No, you didn't. There was an empty feeling in your voice. It was like someone had given you the winning lottery number, but the ticket had already expired, and someone, it was an old ticket.
No, that's not all true. I was raving about it when I called you. I said the only problem I had with it was you leave with, like, what was the point, because you've been through the emotional ringer for 90 minutes, and you're left being emotionally wrung out. There's no catharsis, but I like that for my horror movies,
All right, well, it sounded, you can say that now, but when I spoke to you, it sounded like a man who was in despair, deeply disappointed.
Oh, you have no recall because I called you.
I have recall, and you were not excited.
The day after I saw the screening, I was sitting in front of the laundromat, and I was telling you how much I liked it. And you mentioned them, and I said, "Well,
were there hot chicks in the laundromat?"
No, this is Florida, man. There's flip flops and floppy stomachs.
Florida, where people go to die.
Yeah. Anyway, Olivia, are you still with us?
Did Olivia leave?
I think she might have left.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, she's here because she said hello to Mindy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Mindy doesn't talk.
Mindy doesn't talk?
No, she never answers. I just muted my mic, actually, so I could perform my vocal exercises. I'm practicing up for when Jamie's going to be a guest on my show, and we're going to do a cappella duets together.
Oh, really?
Good.
When is this going to be?
I don't know, Jamie. When did you say you're available?
For you, anytime. Give me time in a day. I'll be there.
Yeah, you always say that. You say that, and then you never show.
Oh, is that the way you are?
Am I going to be stood up, brokenhearted again?
I've heard this so much from the woman in my life. I give me a date and I'll be there for the singing a cappella duet thing.
Well, don't do it on the air where it's recorded, Jamie. Give a date and then break it.
But that's probably good. He'll make sure he's there. No, we're
going to
do it on the air, Jerry. We're going to do it on the air, but we always have private shows, don't we, Jamie?
Yes.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about that. I was telling him not to make a date on the air right now where it's recorded and people can hear it in case he breaks his promise.
Oh, that'd be fun. Then we're going to, like, badger him forever about it.
Oh, shit.
Oh, you're right. That's true. We don't.
Yeah,
you don't want
to badger Jamie. He gets enough shit. He's fighting a multi-front war as it is, like the rest of us.
I know. I do feel bad for Jamie. He has trouble with the women. I mean, he can't make a date.
Well, cut it out. He doesn't have trouble with the women. The women are just fawning over him all the time.
Are they really?
They're like crazy.
This is exactly what I have noticed.
Are these real women, Olivia? Or?
Excuse me?
Are these real women or virtual women here? I mean.
Oh, no, these are real women.
Oh, they are.
Look,
okay.
This is coming from a guy. He had one female caller the other night.
And he abused her.
It was all his own, and he just went after it like a homeless guy in a ham sandwich. Right.
But he did have the
more
brother
love.
You know,
what can I say?
He did make me a friend on MySpace. So
that's
he
nice.
Ha-
that's
he,
nice.
He,
that's
he
nice.
Did.
That's very nice of you, Jason.
Well, hey,
Jason,
you know,
Jason, did I ever tell you Clicks my favorite movie of all time?
Hey, but she changed her mind later, didn't she? Didn't she say No Country for Old Men?
Yeah, I think she got him confused.
Yeah, she was just on the spot, that's all.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a schizophrenic, Jason. I mean, this is...
No, I thought it was really great. Okay. I thought it was really great she called in, because I'd never
seen
it.
That's the fun kind of women to be with there, Jamie.
Because you feel like you're with three women at once. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Remind me
oh,
never
God.
To take relationships.
This is probably the single greatest half hour in our show's history.
See, when you have Blog Talk Radio host therapy, I think that's a good idea.
I think
it's
the way to go. I really think it's the way to go. Now we just need the futurist to call in. And
does the futurist ever call in?
No. He's a recluse. You know, he can do it. He's not going to call in. He doesn't want to give out his number.
He doesn't want to give out his number. Yeah,
Jason, what's your show about tomorrow night? And I'll try.
I'd hate to shamelessly plug my show on another person's show. I don't believe.
Oh yeah, heaven forbid you ever do that.
All right, then let's skip it. Olivia, you're on tomorrow morning.
Let him do it.
Wait, I'm all ready to promo my show. What are you talking about?
Okay, go ahead.
Let him do it. I mean, how many times did you plug our show in like a span of 5 minutes the other night?
Because I'm asked about it.
Oh
yeah, you're asked about it. He's in the chat during the show when he's, you know, supposed to be talking about stuff on my show. He's in there promoting his own show, so.
Dude, I can't help it that, I just called you dude. I can't help it that whenever you bring up a filmmaker, our show has some kind of connection to it. I'm bringing forth personal stories to make the show a little more interesting.
Yeah, I'm deeply moved by that. Anyway. So, you want to hear about tomorrow night on my show?
I do want to hear about tomorrow night.
Yeah, I really don't care, but go
tomorrow
ahead.
Tomorrow night. We are looking ahead at the Oscar race for this year. Anything that's been released this year that is, you know, potential Oscar contender, and looking ahead at the films still coming out.
I would say starting in September, you got a lot of possibilities just that month alone. But yeah, definitely.
Oh yes, definitely.
And I actually think there are a couple in August maybe too, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to have like Kreskin, the future teller, on your show at all for this? Or
I am.
You're only doing this, you know, like 8 months early.
Yeah, I know that it's the Oscar show. I mean, we're talking Oscars already.
This is what he does. I mean, he
that's
does
right.
it better than anyone else.
It's my bread and butter. Speaking of more butter, call in, okay? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure. Wait, I mean, don't mess up. The Zohan's going to be a strong contender.
She never mentioned
21.
I think she really meant Click.
I think she meant Click too. I don't think she'd seen Zohan or knew what the hell it was. But
well, she's in Canada. They're getting movies late up there.
Yeah, they're probably just getting Happy Madison. I mean,
maybe.
You know what? I think that the Academy is starting a new category: best film featuring a slot machine. I think 21 has a chance this year.
Thank you, Jamie, for bringing back 21 there. Jeez, I had no idea that was the movie that was really
going to Jason, I'm just pulling your chain, but I was kind of surprised how uninvolved the movie was. And I love the book. I read the book, and I thought it was a great book. But just the movie, to me, just sort of was like, you know, just I hate to say it, just like this teeny bopper movie. I will give it this. Lawrence Fishburne made the movie interesting for me. Spacey hasn't made anything interesting for me in a long time. But
really?
Lawrence Fishburne,
wow.
I'm very disappointed in Spacey the last couple of years.
Man.
And I would have been the first, dude, I would have been the first to defend him. But, the last thing I really saw him and I liked was The Big Kahuna. And after that, dude, I just lost interest.
You liked Recount, though.
I liked it. I wasn't, like, you know, jumping up and down, like, doing somersaults when he was on the screen. I mean, no, it was one of his better performances, I'll give you that. But, I mean, I wasn't like, oh, my God, Spacey's incredible. He hasn't been this good since Wise Guy. No, I wasn't.
No, he's,
doing
no, he's,
no,
he's,
I mean,
he's,
it wasn't one of his best performances, but.
No, but his Lex Luthor I wasn't crazy about. I wasn't crazy about the shipping news or K-Pax I was disappointed in.
I like K-Pax. I actually thought that
was
good.
I was looking forward to it, but I was disappointed in. I'm not going to lie to you, Jason.
All right.
And the one Beyond the Sea, though, I still think is his Bobby Darin movie, I just really couldn't get into. But I think you have to really like Bobby Darin.
Yeah. I mean, that was one, too, that I wasn't, like, completely thrilled over.
But I do think he's, given the right material and given, and he is, you know, a great director. I like Albino Alligator. I would like to see him go really return to that.
I'd like to see him on the stage, actually. I mean, I think that from everything I've heard, that's where he shines. So,
hey, someone in the chat liked 21. Thank goodness.
We love Mike. We'll give Mike a free pass.
Yeah. Oh, I don't get a free pass?
Oh, God damn it, Jason, we love you. I mean, think how much we adore your show. And
I know,
and we want you on the show so much, you know, we have you finally.
Yes, I know. I do appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to do a show next week about who's going to win the Oscar in 2015. if you'll oblige us, if you'll come on and be our guest, that would be awesome.
By all means, I will, because, you know, I'll have the prediction there. So.
Inglourious Bastards.
Right.
I predict Jamie Duvall will win the Oscar in that year.
In BPR Massacre.
Okay, my friend. There you go. Good prediction.
Yeah,
Olivia, you have your show tomorrow morning, right?
Tomorrow morning. Tomorrow night.
Yeah, some people actually wake up.
I do
what
it every night on Monday night just so I can see if Jamie will actually stay awake for the show.
I don't really stay awake for your show, man. But
you don't stay awake during the show that you're on.
Hey, that's my co-host you're talking about.
I'm sorry, I forgot who I was talking to.
Come on. Show some respect. Let's try to act. Let's just have some fucking manners here, okay?
Oh, yeah, some manners, okay. I forgot where I was at for a moment.
Yeah, come on, Jason, you're family. Don't worry about it.
I know, I'm sorry. We're a dysfunctional family, but...
We are very dysfunctional family.
Yes.
I honestly don't know where to go from here.
Is Olivia still there?
Olivia got disconnected.
Oh.
Her call is gone. Check it out. Her show tomorrow. Yeah, her show is tomorrow, and then she airs Thursdays, Friday evenings, and
when are you
going to
be on
Saturday
the show?
Evenings as well. I don't know. We'll set up a time, and it'll be a big mammoth deal, I'm sure.
Oh, okay, just make sure I know about it. I don't want
to. Well, I have a favor to ask.
What's
Jason?
That? Oh, me?
Yeah, I do.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to be on your show.
You're always welcome.
I mean, no, I'd like to be on, like, when you do when you have the Garney.
Oh,
and...
you want to you're trying to get
No, but I mean, like, you could have me on, like, you know, I could just, like, call in, you know, or something.
Well, that's what
but,
you did last Monday.
You know what? It was a lot of fun.
Well, yes, it was.
Yeah, I'll call it that. Because I don't know if I can, I might not really have anything to say otherwise, depending on what the topic is.
Well, we could have the Jerry segment of the show where, you know, you get your own time to call in and, you know, we could do something like that.
And dissect Sharky's machine or something.
But you'll have to wait till, like, we talk about something and then you can call in and then bash us about it, you know.
No, I wouldn't bash you, Jason. I mean,
it would be like the Howard Beale portion of the show.
The Howard Beale, yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
That's a regular part where, you know, it's now time for the Jerry segment, you know.
Yeah. I mean, no, Howard Beale, you know, we don't have anyone like Howard Beale alive today. So, I'll be more than happy to fill in those shoes.
Well, hey, you know, you're always welcome. So,
yeah,
you know,
well, thank you.
Like that. You know, plus we didn't get the F word into that many times on the last week's show. So.
I'm sorry. You know, I was just trying to lie. You know, that's how I am, you know.
Oh no, I love it. I was re-listening to the show again, and you call in, and I just start laughing again. So
yeah, I know. Well, I'm glad I could do that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. It's been a fun time, Jason. Anytime that you want to call into our show and stop all conversation, please feel free.
that's what I saw.
Okay. All right, everyone. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll see you Wednesday night.
10 p.m. Central tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
Are you a filmmaker looking for a great score for your next movie? Well, look no further than Michael McCormick, the composer whose works you hear at the opening and the closing of every episode of Movie Geeks United. This is a phenomenal talent, and you can hear more samples of his work at michaelmccormickmusic.com or on his MySpace page, which you can access through the Movie Geeks United Top Friends.